sweat the technique. Let's trace the hits.
Hello and welcome to the Sharks of Center, brought to you by the good folks at Covers.com. I'm your host, Jason Logan. Welcome back to the podcast here as we start up the new one-a-week Wednesday format outside of the football landscape, of course. We took some time off last week after a very successful Super Bowl for the pod picks. We absolutely stuck the landing with a lot of bets there for the big game. I hope you followed along in that two-week ramp-up to Super Sunday. And joining me, as always, is my producer, Del. Del, you didn't get the result that you wanted to with Super Bowl 57. I'm sorry, but as a Cowboys fan, I'm not sorry. But you got to feel pretty good about the future of the Philly franchise. Do you have your Eagles plus 900 bet for next year's Super Bowl already?
Yeah. No, I don't. Not yet. I don't like making futures this far in advance and just leaving money in my book that I got to wait a friggin' whole year to cash in. But we'll see. Maybe next year's the year. But it was a great game. I can't be too disappointed because it ended up being a great game and it was a real fun time to watch it. So, and that call is absolute bullshit on the record.
All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. Jalen balled out, though. I mean, if someone deserved MVP and not from the winning team, it was absolutely him. So
exactly. But I hate that now people have more of a case to say that he is a quote unquote running back. So even though he made some killer throws. But
absolutely,
that's the stance that a lot of people are taking, which is ridiculously annoying.
I mean, outside of Mahomes and maybe like Herbert and Joe Burrow, you know, there's not too many other guys that I think you want to have under center right now. So, all right. So the move to the Wednesday pods is going to have us focusing mainly on NBA. And of course, we're going to dive into the madness once March starts and talk baseball in the spring once that gets going here, too. But as well as some other events that pop up on the weekends. As for today, though, with the association still on the All-Star break and NBA getting back into the swing of things on Thursday, I figured it was a good time to kind of blow the dust off of the non-football stuff and kind of touch on best practices and tactics, things that our team at Covers.com does use when putting out those predictive pieces for, you know, NBA, hockey, golf, MMA, all these things that we'll be betting over the next few months and, of course, until football comes back, right? So this is going to be the how-to episode of the Sharp 600, which will run a little looser outside of that 10-minute format. We got a bunch of guests coming on to talk about how they approach different sports, give you some next-level handicapping stuff that they like to follow through when they're placing their bets. We're going to get in and out quick, some great insights on how to bet those markets here from our Covers team. All right, so let's do it. He's the senior analyst here at Covers.com, a dear, dear friend. He's been living the NBA life since college football ended. Andrew Cayley, welcome back to the Sharp 600.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
All right, so we'll just jump right into it. NBA player props becoming just as popular as sides and totals here. Beyond the standard stats, what are the angles and edges that you want when you're betting NBA player props?
It's a combination of things. Obviously, the stats are important, but there's a delight in being able to narrow down your variables when it comes to betting player props, right? So if you're betting a whole game, you have to handicap everything, rebounding, shooting, defense, everything. When it comes to the player props, you can just do one thing, whether it's three-point defense or rebounding rates, all sorts of things like that. Then you go into other factors like who is missing from a team. You have to be following the injury reports very closely, and that's a big theme in the NBA right now with load management and stuff. But then you also get situations after the trade deadline right now. So the Suns are a pretty good defensive team and they got Kevin Durant, but they're down their best perimeter defenders in Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson have been giving up big points to guys like Trae Young and De'Aaron Fox recently. So it's been tough for books to adjust to that early on.
All right. So this season, pumping out the most points since we've seen since the 1960s. And books doing a pretty good job of padding against that with some bigger totals. 51% lean in terms of overs right now. What are your go-tos when it comes to capping NBA over-unders beyond, you know, just the general stats?
Pace of play is the big one for me. It's just how many teams are taking a ton of shots per 100 possessions right now. There's several teams in the NBA taking more than 90 shots per game, and even teams that are bad at shooting the ball are going to score points if you're taking that many shots in a short amount of time. On top of that, I think the defense has taken a step back this year overall. The defensive ratings that I follow, the efficiency numbers for teams just in general look like they're down this season with a premium being put on offense this year more than ever before. So pace of play and defensive efficiency are the two things I really key on.
All right. So we talked about props here, but beyond sides and totals, the obvious things, what other markets are out there that you're having success with them? And then why are you having success with those ones?
It's definitely the player props more than anything else right now. And I really focus in on plus money props these days. Things like made three-pointers props or double-doubles. I love seeing a guy's rebounding total set at 9.5, and then I'll immediately go and look to see what his double-double market is at the same time. So a lot of the times you'll see that his rebounding total, maybe it's 9.5 and it's juiced to -130. But you know what? His double-double market is at +105 sort of thing. So always keep your eye out on value for things like that. And the three-pointer market is a really interesting one because you'll get some big numbers for guys. There's more three-pointers shot than ever before. We know that. And books are just a little hesitant sometimes. You're not going to see a number much bigger than 4.5 ever. But there's guys in the NBA right now taking 10, 11 threes per game right now. And guys who are hitting these numbers at a higher rate than ever before, 40% isn't out of the question for a lot of these guys. So I find a lot of plus money value in those made three props as well.
I was going to go Damian Lillard.
Yes.
All right, that's Andrew Cayley getting you ready to get back into the swing of things. NBA starting up back on Thursday. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
With the PGA and LIV Tours getting into full swing here as we come to the spring, you're going to be reading a lot from this guy. He's here to talk about the finer points of wagering on golf, making his sharp 600 debut, Chris Gregory. What's up, Chris?
How are we doing, Matt? It's good to be here.
All right, pal. So analytics boom has not ignored golf. There's plenty of in-depth stats available out there. What are your go-to metrics when it comes to kind of capping golf bets and finding edges?
Yeah, it definitely depends on the course, but generally speaking, you know, looking at the ball striking numbers like strokes gained approach and strokes gained tee to green, those are the best indicators of success and probably tell the best story of who's going to play well. Beyond that, I'm looking at things like greens regulation percentage, proximity to the hole, bogey avoidance, stuff like that. And then pairing that with some of the putting and scrambling numbers based on course fit.
All right. So beyond the current form and the course history and all that stuff that we generally use for golf handicapping, what are some other angles that you dive into that people might not think about when you're looking to cap a player performance in a tournament?
Yeah, like you mentioned, recent form and course history are a big part of it. But beyond that, you're looking at kind of the course fit that I mentioned earlier. You know, ask yourself questions like, is it a bomber's paradise? What are the grass types? Is it going to turn into a birdie fest? Things like that, and then kind of approach it based on how you answer those questions. You know, every golfer on tour has their strengths and their weaknesses. So it's kind of about finding the spots that make sense for them. You know, I look at a guy like Brian Harman, who's one of the most accurate guys off the tee, but is one of the more shorter guys in length. Put him on a short track where hitting fairways is critical, and he's proven he can contend, right? So it's about finding the spots where these guys can succeed.
All right. Weather always a factor, especially when we get into the spring. How do you fold things like cold and rain and wind into your bets when you know kind of weather's going to have an impact round to round?
Yeah, it's a toughie just because it's so unpredictable, right? It changes day to day. It changes, you know, from the morning to the afternoon groupings. You know, we saw that at the Players last year where, you know, if you got the luck of the draw, you ended up on the much better side, right? Obviously, you have guys who play better when the going gets tough. But if nothing else, it gives the best ball strikers, especially the ones with distance, the bigger advantage. You know, I also like to look at scrambling numbers because when the winds get up, more guys are missing the green. So getting up and down for par to keep the round going becomes even more critical. So when you know the weather's coming, which isn't always the case, that's what I try to look for.
All right. We know Masters just around the corner. Chris, before we let you go, any dark horses to win the Greenies jacket this year? Who do you like?
Oh, man. Looking at maybe not a dark horse, but a Willie Z type. I think he's due for one of these majors. You know, he obviously won in Memphis last year, but I think a major's coming for him. It's tough. Maybe a Taylor Pendereth. Maybe one of these Canadians can get in the mix. Corey Connors usually plays well at Augusta. But it's tough. You know, we still got a couple months to go, and there's lots of golf to be played.
All right, Chris Gregory, getting you ready for betting some golf this summer and spring. The NHL season's coming down the home stretch, and if you're looking to make some bucks on the pucks, we've got Jared Hockman here, not to talk about Rihanna this time, but to talk about the finer points of NHL betting here on the how-to episode of the Sharp 600. Jared, nice to have you back.
Yeah, always good to be here, talk a little puck. help educate the masses.
All right. So the bulk of NHL betting comes down to the money line. But as we get towards the end of the season, we see some pretty lopsided numbers, and we're starting to see those already here. What are some secondary markets that can take the sting out of those big money line faves?
Yeah, you want to start looking like the three-way money line. It's also known as the regulation or 60-minute money line. In doing that, you can generally knock like 60 to 90 cents, sometimes even more, off of a team's price. And it's not quite as juicy as saying, you know, the minus 1.5 puck line. But the thing is, you don't need to win by multiple goals. You can just win without going to overtime or a shootout. So it's a great way to kind of bring a favorite down there. You can also look at single period props, you know, such as a first period money line or puck line. You know, it also gives a chance for like what you think is the stronger team to kind of get out to that early lead and do well. But you get it at a fraction of the full game price because you're only playing with 20 minutes instead of 60.
All right. So we had no shortage of stats for things like basketball and football, but not everyone knows the advanced metrics to look at when it comes to betting hockey. What are some of the good ones that you go to? How do you utilize them in your NHL betting?
Yeah, Jason, I think, you know, for teams, I like to look at 5-on-5 Corsi 4 percentage. So that measures the total shot attempts for and against in a game at even strength. It's really a good measure of how a team actually fares in terms of puck possession and controlling play. I also like to use what's called expected goals for and against. It gives a little bit more of a true indication of how a team is performing on the ice. Because sometimes, you know, you run into a hot goalie or your goalie struggles, you can really distort the actual goal totals. You take away some of that variance. Looking at players, obviously shots on goal is key. But for me, I love shot attempts per 60 minutes. You know, highlighting guys that consistently send pucks towards the net every time they're on the ice. Really good for shooting and or scoring props. And then for goalies, looking at goals saved above expected is a nice one to use to help show if a goalie's performance is more of a result of their play, the defense in front of them, or a little bit of in between. You can go to sites like Natural Stat Trick, Money Puck, Hockey Reference, even NHL.com offers a number of these advanced metrics.
Good stuff. So hockey, I'm going to say, at least for the American audience, we're Canadian, so we're just force-fed hockey since we're born. But for the American audience, still not on that same tier as football and basketball and baseball, you know, which can lead to some softer markets, especially in the alternative markets. Are there alternative odds out there, alternative markets that you find that these opportunities are greater?
Honestly, you know, I think one of the best opportunities actually is just in points and power play points, not even alternative market. But the reason it is because there's so much moving. You know, there's always injuries. Coaches are kind of shuffling lines and power play units. And often you'll get guys that move up from the third line to the first line or get up into the first power play unit, you know, getting that really prime chance to score and deliver. Now, you're not going to see books that always adjust to that. So you're going to get a guy that's on the top power play unit. Now he's at like plus 500 to get a power play point. You know, really creates some value. You want to find out how to do that. Follow the beat writers on Twitter. They post morning line rushes, kind of shows you who's skating with. Also, sites like Daily Faceoff and Left Wing Lock, they kind of aggregate all that stuff for you to check it out. And, you know, every day you can, you know, usually try and find, you know, one or two places where you get some real good betting value to pounce on before the books are on top of it.
All right. Sounds good. So, Jared Hochman, getting you ready for the home stretch of the NHL season. Thanks, Jared.
No problem.
All right. One of the fastest growing markets in sports betting over the past decade has been MMA. And our next guest has been delivering the old rear naked choke to the bookies here for covers for some time. We actually think that you could last a few rounds there, Roa, because you're a tough MF-er, man. But Roa Pineo, welcome back to the Sharp 600. Going to get you ready for betting some MMA here, which seems like a weekly occurrence. Now, when it comes to sizing up bouts, where do you start your handicap when it comes to breaking down two fighters?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is recent performances, particularly over the last 2 to 3 years. And you want to go beyond the win-loss numbers. You want to look at the quality of opponents, whether the wins were dominant or the losses competitive. Maybe the fighter was clearly winning the fight until getting caught by a flash knockout or a submission. Maybe it was a controversial decision or one of the fighters accepted the bout on short notice or with an injury. Those should all kind of factor in.
All right. Don't get caught playing MMA math either, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now, MMA metrics kind of on the rise here over the past few years. Which ones do you actually put some weight into when you're working out your process for capping about?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I'm going to prefer more context to statistics, but it can still be a useful tool to kind of evaluate a fighter's style, whether they prefer, for example, to strike at distance or willingness to go for takedowns. That comes with a big caveat, though, because a relatively small sample size of fights means that outlier performance can really skew those numbers.
All right. So between like YouTube and streaming services and stuff like that, you can pretty much go back and watch most fighters and their past matchups. What do you look for when you're reviewing fighters in action?
Yeah, I mean, speed is a big thing for me because you can't really grasp how quick someone is until you actually see them in action. The other thing is that watching a fighter paints a more complete picture than simply saying someone is, let's say, a striker or a grappler. For example, does a grappling specialist use single, double leg takedowns, or they use techniques like sweeps or trips? Because different approaches are going to have a higher likelihood of working against different styles of opponents.
Okay. So combat sports, MMA, boxing, things like that, they do often come with heavy price tags on the favorites, which not everyone likes to lay. A lot of bettors aren't laying minus 800 to win. So yeah. Which alternative odds do you find offer kind of a better reward with a little extra risk?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not looking at method to win odds, you're really missing out on one of the best markets in UFC. Some fighters have a tendency to win fights in particular ways, and that combined with an opponent whose style matches up with that is a great way to shorten those odds. For example, if you have a favorite, let's say, who's a high-volume striker, good cardio, but not much knockout power, they're facing a guy that's hittable, tough opponent with an iron chin, backing the fave to win by decision is going to give you a much nicer payout than the money line.
All right, Rohit Panea telling you how to KO your bookie here with some MMA betting this spring and summer.
All right, time for the two-minute drill with Arthur DeCesar of the Superbook. Nice to have you back, pal. NBA, coming out of the break, which team holds the biggest liability to win the title?
It's going to be two, and they're both going to be in the West. The Warriors, who we currently have 18-1, and the Lakers, no surprise, they were as high as 200-1, now 30-1.
Playing tomorrow night, nonetheless, too. Who do you think is a live long shot to make a run here at the NBA title at this point in season?
I think it's another team in the West who got forgotten after all the trades, the Clippers, 12-1. I think the Clippers are live.
With Russ. College hoop futures, usually headlined by the same teams every single year, but which non-blue blood program could win the whole thing this year?
There's no doubt it's usually Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, North Carolina, but as far as us, the teams that we would lose on who are non-blue bloods, TCU, mm-hmm. who we opened 80-1, now currently 30-1, and Miami, who was 200-1, now 25-1. Miami would be our biggest loser.
All right. So as a bookmaker, put your bookmaker shoes on, what do you enjoy more, Super Bowl or March Madness?
Wow, that's a tough question. I love them both. Obviously, Super Bowl is a different animal with the 500 props. I'm a college basketball guy. I love conference tournaments and March Madness, so I'm going to pick college basketball.
All right, Superbook, you guys always have great golf odds there. With the Masters around the corner, who do bettors like to wear the green jacket this year?
Well, outside of Tiger, because they bet Tiger blindly, you're going to look at two guys, Colin Morikawa, who was 25-1, now 20, and Tony Finau was 50, now 25-1.
All right, we don't do a whole lot of hockey here, but NHL teams, which NHL teams are a loser to win the Cup? And if we're rating championship trophies, where does the Stanley Cup stand in your rankings?
As far as the NHL goes, I'll give you one in each conference. Obviously, the Bruins, an historic year they're having. We opened them as high as 40-1. They're now 4-1. And then in the West, the Oilers, who were 25-1, now 14. And no doubt about it, Stanley Cup is by far the best trophy. If anyone has a different opinion, they're wrong.
I know, 100%. The thing's huge.
Yep. You can drink out of it.
You can drink out of it.
You get to hang out with it. You get to take it on a walk. That thing's phenomenal. It's by far
pretty durable. It's not like the World Series trophy, which is looks
oh,
like
it
it's
always gets
break.
Dinged up. It's amazing.
Yep. Throwing it in pools. Yeah, mm-hmm. Stanley Cup, best trophy in sports.
Not even close. Yep.
All right. That is it for the how-to episode of the Sharp 600. Thank you, Daco, Chris, Jared, Rohit. Thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Dell. Thank you for listening. A reminder to please take a couple seconds, rate and review the podcast. Let us know what you like. Do you like this how-to stuff? We'll kind of roll it into the current content here for the podcast. We will be back next Wednesday diving into all the action from the hardwood. Until then, good luck.